What number is this, Chip?
Episode 15 and the Fandom Round Table. My name's Ian Lee. I'm in London, England, and I'm here to talk about some rare Mickey Dolan stuff from the 70s.
Okay, no, I mean, like, don't get excited, man. It's because I'm short, I know. Zilch.
You're listening to Zilch, a Monkeys podcast.
On Zilch is Ian Lee from monkeybootlegs.com. Welcome back, Ian.
Hey, Sarah, nice to talk to you. We've not, when was the convention? March 20, whatever year this is, 14. It's nice to talk to you properly. I hope you're well.
Oh, doing great today. We've asked Ian back today to talk some more about his impressive collection of both monkeys memorabilia and other goodies, and also to talk about two exciting projects that have got the hardcore collectors in the fandom drooling.
Are they drooling about these? I hope they are, because I think these are genuinely really exciting. But I don't know if people are drooling. Are they? Yeah, well, let's say they're drooling.
By the time we're done here, hopefully they will be.
They should be drooling because these are exciting, which I've got. Bizarrely, I find myself in the very rare position of on the cusp of releasing kind of two. Holy grails is quite a strong word, but I'm going to use it. Two holy grails of Mickey Dolan solo material. Which would you like to start with, Sarah, the DVD or the LP?
Well, let's start with the DVD. I guess this is a movie called Keep Off My Grass.
Yeah. That's what it's called.
I can't imagine what this movie might be about, but why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
It's about drugs. It's about grass and weed. It's a 1975 kind of stoner comedy starring Mickey. Most of you will know. I know I'm preaching to the converted, but maybe there are one or two of you with gaps in your knowledge. In the 70s, I always felt kind of sorry for Mickey in the early 70s more than the other guys because, you know, he had been the lead singer of some of the biggest hits of the 60s, and then nothing really happened. You know, his acting career didn't take off, his singing career didn't take off. But he made a few films in the 70s. He made Night of the Strangler, which is not set at nighttime and features no strangling. He
Correct.
Also appeared, yeah, it's a really, I love that film, but it's primarily for the scene where Mickey's drunk.
Yeah.
He also appeared in Linda Lovelace for President. Gosh, that's a movie that you don't really want to see more than once. I mean, awful film. But he also made this film in 1975, Keep Off My Grass. And I had heard about it and heard about it. And I've been trying to track it down. It's been on my radar for maybe 15 years. I've been actively trying to track it down for the last 2.5-3 years. Was going online, was emailing people, was phoning up people that I knew whose names were similar to those with people connected with the movie. I was leaving messages for a Mormon pastor in Salt Lake City. I was phoning up everywhere and getting nowhere. And had sort of given up on it. I'd kind of put it on the back burner. And then at the Monkeys convention where I met you, it was one of those things. I was walking past two people talking, and as I walked past, I heard one of them say, "Oh yeah, so we screened Keep Off My Grass last week and Mickey and Amy came and watched it." Ba-doing! My, you know, just everything lit up, and I did what I come across as quite cocky in my job. I'm actually quite shy in real life, and the thought of approaching some strangers and having a chat is very difficult for me. But I went up to them. I said, "Look, I'm really sorry to interrupt." I put on my poshest English voice because that kind of opens doors. I said, "I'm really sorry to interrupt, but did you say that you'd seen Keep Off My Grass recently?" She said, "Oh yeah, we saw it and we showed it to Mickey and Amy Dolenz." And I just got chatting to this person, and this was a wonderful woman called Chanel, who is the daughter of Mr. Albert J. Saltzer, who was one of the producers. And we got chatting, and I kind of explained my idea that I wanted to screen it. That's all I wanted to do at the time, was screen it. And she very kindly gave me her phone number and her email. And a few months later, we're at the stage where I have a copy of it on DVD. Now, well, actually, not now. Where is it? It's here somewhere. Here it is. Here it is. I'm holding it now. This is it.
We can all see it. Yes.
I've got it. So that's kind of the convoluted history of how I came about it. As a film, it's a 70s stoner comedy. It's very much of the period. but you do get to hear Mickey say a swear word within the first opening minute. So that's got to be a bonus for anybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, what are your plans for releasing it? You said you talked about screening, but then things have evolved.
Yeah, I'm very lucky in that Albert J. Salzer, the producer, has given me permission to release it on DVD, which is brilliant. It is brilliant. It's complicated, but it's still brilliant. I've never done anything like this before, so I'm kind of whistling in the dark a little bit. But he sent me a DVD of Keep Off My Grass, and all it had on there was the film and the trailer. And he was quite happy for me to kind of release that as a DVD and sell it. I wasn't, because as a Monkees fan, I'd be happy to see that, but I'd want a bit more. So what's happening? I've sent off we couldn't find the film stock, so we're having to do it all from this DVD. I've sent it off to a film restorer and a filmmaker in the States called Garrett Gilchrist, who got in touch with me. And he has done an excellent job of cleaning up the trailer, and he's going to send me, him and his team have been cleaning up the actual movie and cleaning up the sound, because the copy I got was pretty lousy. It looked like it was filmed straight off a projector onto VHS and it was a few generations old. So he's cleaning that up, so that's going to be a lot better. And I want to try and get some extras on there. Now, we're going to have a little short film about how I managed to track down the film, and it's going to have reconstructions in, and it's going to be stupid. Garrett's going to film a little piece on how he reconstructed it. I've been in touch with, I can't remember, Irma Carlish, who is one of the writers. The thing is, I'm in London, and mm-hmm. all of these people are in the States. So the writer and one of the other actors in it, Marcus J. Grapes, there's a name, are both up for being interviewed. But they live in the States. They live in, I think they both live in California. So I can't really afford to go over there and interview them. So I'm talking to a couple of film crews, and I'm trying to call in a few favours and hopefully send out a couple of film crews to go and interview them as extras for the DVD. I'm going to do a commentary as well. And that's it for the moment. Mickey is aware of this project. He's been aware of it for a little while. And the dream scenario is I go and interview Mickey and film him about this and about the LP we'll talk about in a second, and also get him to do a commentary. Realistically, I think it's pretty unlikely. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of waiting to hear back, but I've been waiting to hear back for a long time. And I know he's busy doing his play, and, you know, he's done loads of things. He's done more for me than he needs to. So I'm expecting nothing. I would love it, but I'm expecting nothing.
Understandable. But, you know, as the album says, stranger things have happened.
Hey, listen, man, I honestly thought you've got to ask these people. You've got to ask. And mm-hmm. all they can do is say no. He hasn't said no yet. You know, he hasn't said no. So it's still a possibility. If he does say yes, then I will bite the bullet and buy a ticket to the States and fly out there. And I just have to say that on both these projects, I'm not going to make any money. I'm doing it, but I know it's hard to believe in the 21st century world that someone would be doing this for the love and the art, but that's totally what I'm doing it for. I'm doing it as a Monkees fan that wants to get this stuff out there. I will lose money on this DVD. This will actually cost me money to get this made. So,
I was going to ask you about the economics of both of these projects too, but I was kind of curious because you've mentioned it a couple of times in what you've said already, that you're also going to be releasing, I guess it's 10 Mickey Dolan singles that were released with MGM?
Yeah, that's actually happening. That's actually going to happen. We have signed the contract. He did these 10 sides for MGM, 9.5, 10. And Romar, which I think was an MGM subsidiary. And it's been really hard to try and track down where those songs have gone. And it turns out Universal owned them. And I know that various people throughout the years, people far more talented than me, have approached Universal, and Universal have either said, we don't have them, or we're not interested. Mr. Sandoval himself said to me, they won't license them to a small independent record label. Well, I have a magic email address, And that magic email address has the letters BBC in it, which for some reason you Americans seem to love. And I've noticed it opens doors.
Well, everybody with an English accent is either an evil villain or a rock star. You know this.
I'm not decided which one of those I am yet. But I got in touch with Universal and I sent it from the BBC email. I made very clear from the start this was not a BBC project, but it was independent of that. And it took about 6, 7, 8 months of being sent from one person to another, back to the first person, then sent across. And it was about 9 people down the chain where someone said, yeah, we don't have those songs. I'm the person you want to speak to. We don't own those songs. We've never owned them. And that's when I managed to come back with photos of every A and B side that he released on MGM and Roma. I said, yeah, you do. If you own MGM, you own these. And he came back. He went, oh, that's interesting. Let me look into it. And he did. And he found them. They own the rights. To cut a very long, dull story short, we've bought the rights to those songs, or we've bought the rights to license those songs for the next 3 years.
So, Ian, I haven't heard any of these singles. What is your favorite of the songs that you're going to be releasing?
Have you not heard these singles?
Not at all.
Oh, this is really exciting. Then people like you, that excites me, because I kind of assume most fans are as geeky as me, and they've... Okay, brilliant. Then you're going to love it, I think. The one I'd like to play a little bit of, not too much, because come on, guys, buy the album. It's a Harry Nilsson song. It was written for the unwatchable film Son of Dracula. I think Nilsson sings it in the song, but here's a little snippet of Mickey Dolenz singing Daybreak. I absolutely love this one.
Wonderful.
And it's going to be good. Again, this is the first time I've done this. It's so bloody complicated licensing music. So we can't put out any of the alternate versions that may be floating around of these songs. We can only put these 10 songs out. We can't put out any live versions or anything on this record. We can't put it out on CD, I'm afraid, guys. Sorry, compact disc lovers, because that would have cost a fortune. What we have got is we've got digital rights, which means we can legitimately sell these on iTunes. And we will do eventually, but that'll be a bit further down the line. The main project is we've got vinyl rights. So we're going to produce a 180-gram vinyl LP, probably coloured vinyl, and have the 10 sides on there collected together legitimately for the first time ever. That's what's going to happen.
That's amazing. Do you know yet how much you're going to be charging both for the DVD and the single release? And also, can you explain a little bit, you've talked throughout our conversation a little, but kind of about the economics involved in this and why it isn't just as simple as uploading this stuff to YouTube?
Oh, it's so complicated. I can't tell you the prices yet because I don't know. The record, I'm doing it with a friend of mine called Glenn, who does work for a small record company, although, again, it's independent of them. I'm starting up my own record label, 7A Records, guys. Pretty obvious. I'm going to talk to him this week about the price. He sent over the figures. We're going to try and keep it as cheap as possible. We're not doing this to fleece the fans. I want to break even on the record. We are planning an initial run of 500 LPs. I don't know, Sarah. I've got no idea. Does 500 sound a lot? Does that? What do you think?
I don't know.
No.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a logical number. I wouldn't go higher than that. I don't know.
No, I don't know, because I don't want to be sat with 450 Mickey Dolenz solo albums in my spare room, because my wife will go mental. If we did 250 was the initial figure. If we get 500 made, oh, it's so boring. If we get 500 made, it's substantially less per album. How much are we going to charge? I don't know. I really don't know. It's going to be affordable. The DVD, I kind of got a figure in my head, but I want to hold off until it's out there, because money will be made on the DVD. I won't be making the money will go to the producers, basically, and I will get a stipend off the back of that.
And I'm sure as times gets closer, you'll have information up on your website and maybe even pre-order opportunities.
Yeah, that's all going to happen. Facebook.com/monkeybootlegs is the place to go. There's also, and it's not been built yet, and that's because I've been very slack, I own keepoffmygrass.com, and that will be up in the next few weeks, hopefully, where there'll be information. You'll be able to buy it direct from there. We're gonna I don't know about the album, but the DVD will be sold direct from the websites first, because it means that we get a sort of a bigger chunk of the money, the producers, and then after about 3 months the DVD will go on Amazon, so you'll be able to order it from Amazon, but then Amazon take a load of cash from that, so yeah. That's why we're holding from there for a while. But this, I think these are really cool, and I'm kind of a bit geeky for the early Dolan 70s stuff. I always have been, but I genuinely think that actually having these things, physically having these things, legitimately, the movie's not been seen since 1975. I don't know anyone that's seen it, and it's certainly not out there to download or anything like that. Yeah. So that's cool. And we're going to make this record. I swear, man, we're going to make this record look beautiful. I've got a top artist, Scott Balcony, working on the cover, and he's just sent me kind of some rough ideas for it. It's going to look stunning. It's going to be a gatefold sleeve. It's going to have really detailed liner notes. The liner notes will either be Mickey going through each track individually, telling us about it, or I've also found a kind of rock historian who knows about that period of Mickey's career in the greatest detail, and wow, he will do notes if Mickey won't. So this is going to be it's going to be beautiful. The album, it's going to be I'm hoping it's going to be a must-have piece, because I know that I'm making stuff, Sarah, that I would want to buy, and I'm desperately trying to keep it within a price that is fair for everyone as well. It's not like, hey, I don't know if you've heard, there are some reissue companies out there that charge over the odds for records, and they don't do a particularly good job. They're not doing it because they're passionate about it. And this is about the passion and hopefully coming out with a beautiful record and DVD.
Absolutely. And I think both with these projects and with monkeybootlegs.com, you have really done some amazing things for the fans and for the Monkees fandom over the years. Those of us who were at the 2014 Monkees convention saw you roving around the hotel with a video camera. I seem to recall you gathering some interviews for a documentary you were contemplating on the fandom. What inspired that idea, and how is that little project progressing?
I saw a film, and I can't remember the name of the film. So people at home listening on the bus or in their cars will be shouting. It was a documentary about Beatles, the Beatles. I don't know if you've heard of those guys. Very popular over here in the 60s.
Once or twice, yeah.
By the way, check out thebeatlesneverexisted.com if you want a good laugh. Anyway, and it was basically this guy interviewing people who'd met the Beatles or worked with the Beatles. And I saw that. I thought, why is there nothing like that for Monkees? It looks really easy the way he's done it. I could do it better than that. I've got a better camera than that. And so that was what the inspiration was. I was roving at the 2014 convention. The film, I've got a title for the film now. It's going to be called Listen to the Fans. Yeah.
Love it. Love
it. Like the song, like that song that the Monkees did, What Am I Doing Hanging Around? And it's going to happen. It's just, I've been sidetracked a little bit by the vinyl and the DVD, if I'm completely honest. Putting a film together, and this is something I have done, but I've done it with other people. I've never done it on my own. It's really hard work. It's really hard. It's so hard. But there's some good stuff in there. I believe you're interviewed in there. Some of the wonderful fans. Mickey was interviewed for it. I got some great footage kind of following him backstage as he went from the doing his Q&A to doing his signed photos. Bobby Hart's in it. There's some brilliant stuff in it. I just need to do the boring process of syncing up all the video and sound, then kind of trawling through it. But that will probably, all of these projects, probably not going to make it for Christmas, unfortunately. I would imagine early next year, to be completely honest.
Well, now we all know to ask our friends and relatives for cash for Christmas.
Cash, and hopefully not that much cash. You know, I can't stress this enough. We're doing everything we can. If we sell all 500 of these LPs at the price we have in our mind, we need to talk about a bit, we will lose 70 quid, you know, so we'll kind of break even. So you know, we're not doing this to fleece you guys.
Right.
Me, not doing it to fleece me. We're doing it to, because we want it out there and we believe in it.
Well, and I think it's just a wonderful thing that you've done, and the, investing the time as much as the money that you've done for this project. So thank you so much for stopping by. Where can folks find out more about these projects?
Guys, come to monkeybootlegs.com, facebook.com/monkeysbootlegs, monkeybootlegs.com as well. Or if you want to email me, if you've got any info on these projects that you think might be useful, or you just want to, you know, give me a pat on the back and say, we're thinking of you, brother, you can email admin@monkeybootlegs.com.
Wonderful. Thanks again for dropping by, Ian, and good luck with all these projects.
Thank you, Sarah. I miss you, Sarah. I love you, Sarah. See you soon, Sarah. Bye, Sarah.
Bye. Coming up after this commercial, our fandom roundtable.
Hi, Zilch fans. This is Melanie Mitchell. Be sure to check out my book, Monkey Magic, a book about a TV show about a band. It's a lighthearted review and companion for the TV show that made the 60s fun. The paperback is available online from Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and the ebook can be bought anywhere that fine ebooks are sold. Check out the Monkey Magic Facebook page, follow me on Tumblr at bluemoonalto.tumblr.com, and listen for my contributions here on Zilch, a Monkeys podcast.
I want to make a few programming notes before we start today's fandom roundtable. I brought together four of the most creative people I know in the Monkees fandom, and we spent an evening discussing the wonderful diversity of the Monkees fandom and the different types of creative works that can be found in it. However, not all of these works are appropriate for all ages. While we kept our conversation pretty friendly to all our listeners, if you have anyone in your family under the age of, say, 10 or 11, whoever's the adult or the closest thing to a responsible adult in your family should give this first segment a listen before passing it on to the kids. Also, the audio does get just a little scratchy at a point or two, and we apologize for that. Last but definitely not least, today's show is dedicated to Melissa Montag, better known by her Frotis Femme nickname, Anissa. She is one of three sisters I gained through the Monkees fandom, rather than blood, and she passed away suddenly in May 2012, after Davy died but before Nez rejoined the Monkees. Anissa is the reason I started Fandom Lenses, and the reason I said yes when Ken asked me to be a part of this podcast. I'll never be the natural she would have been at co-hosting Zilch, but since she's not here, I guess I'll have to do. I love you, Anissa sis, and I think of you every time I sit down to record.
Hi everybody, this is Sarah Clark, and I want to tell you a little story. Once upon a time, about 3,300 years ago, give or take, a blind traveling storyteller by the name of Homer sat at a fireside one evening and shared the story that we all know as the Iliad. It's a great tale full of battles and love and jealousy and bickering gods, and you should really read it if you haven't. However, two youngsters sitting by the fire were not so impressed. Hector, the honorable Trojan warrior, was their favorite person in the story, and he died. What was that all about? So they wandered away that evening and talked about the story, and then the next night they told their version of the story to the village. Hector slew Achilles instead of the other way around, and they all lived happily ever after. And thus, fan fiction was born. Every fandom has creative artists, even if possibly not especially the Monkees. That creativity is actually how I started out as a member of the Monkees fandom, and it's pretty much led me to where I'm sitting right now. Today we're going to be talking about fan creativity and the culture of Monkees fandom with four of the most talented writers and artists in Monkeydom. But more importantly, they are four very good friends of mine. So first, if y'all can say hi as I go around our virtual room. First is Erin Christie, fan artist.
Hello.
Jamie Hitchcock, you probably know her best as the cover artist of Melanie Mitchell's Monkey Magic, and she is also an occasional Princess Gwyn impersonator.
Hello.
Harold, you better get this carriage out of the mud!
Next up, we have Michigan Blackhawk, a.k.a. Mish, fan fiction author. She actually was my one-time writing partner in the Frotis Femmes, who I've talked about many times on my own website, Fandom Lenses. And she's also the younger sister that my parents didn't see fit to give me.
Hello.
And then finally, we have, last but not least, Miss Minnie, fan fiction author and co-owner of the Monkees fandom phenomenon known as Naked Persimmon.
Hey there.
I thought we'd go around the room first and basically ask everybody, what drew you into the Monkees, first of all, and then more specifically into becoming a member of the Monkees fandom? Because I think those are two really different things. Do you want to kick us off, Erin?
I was drawn to the Monkees first by their music, and it's just great music for any age. Listened to it when I was little, and I still listen to it today. About a year and a half ago, almost 2 years actually now, I got into the fandom. I always like expanding on my understanding of any canon, whether it be Monkees or sci-fi or Harry Potter, whatever it is, by adding art or writing or anything like that. It's a way to go beyond what exists and create new aspects to what people love and have come to appreciate over the years. That's why I'm still in the fandom today.
Jamie, how did you find the Monkees and the Monkees fandom?
I first found them when I was probably about 8 or 9, and it was the show and the music that drew me in. But at that age, there were no Monkees friends. As far as I knew, there was no Monkees fandom. I mean, it's elementary school. Everybody else was listening to whatever was hip at the time. I bounced out of it for a little while, then back in probably in my late teens, and found one other friend who I just met by chance at a record store, and that was our fandom, just a couple of us. And then that was the 30th anniversary, and the Disney Channel was showing this special, and it got interesting for a while, but there was nobody else. In late 2012, of course, we all know what happened early part of 2012 with Davey, but then in the fall there was the tour. I went to go see them with another good friend of mine, Judy, up in Chicago. When we got back, I thought, well, I've got this Tumblr account that I started for no reason. I wonder if there's anybody online that's interested in the Monkees. Well, never would imagine. So here it is a couple years later, and I've got a whole bunch of friends who are closer than family, it feels like. A lot of really just cool, crazy opportunities that have happened. It's been a lot of fun. I have to stick around.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of family, my official and everything but blood little sister, Mish.
Well, I too got into them. It was round about the 86-87 reunion when they were showing the episodes on Nickelodeon. So for me, it was pretty much exclusively the show and the couple actual vinyl record albums that my parents got me. I never had anybody that I could talk to. And not only that, I had to keep anything I was interested in hidden away from everyone because I would get teased or tormented about it. So I had to kind of keep it real close to my chest. And when the show wasn't on anymore from age 11, 12, all the way until I was in my early 20s, they just kind of disappeared from my life. And then I saw Head on, I think it was AMC. All I could think is, where have these guys been my whole life? So I had an internet connection for the first time in my life, and I thought, maybe there are other people out there who write stuff or like this stuff. And I found the writing group Long Title, and that's how I met Sarah and some of the people that have become my family. And I thought, oh my goodness, there are other people who write stories too. And it was a complete revelation. And that's kind of how I got into it, where I found people that for the first time I could jabber at and they wouldn't think I was weird-ish.
Your monkey's normal.
Very, very.
Yes. And then last but not least, Miss Minnie.
First found the Monkees when I was a young teenager. Saw them on Nick at Night's Summer Block Party, and it caught me at just that right age when I was 14 and had no friends, and they were like four friends that I would have as soon as I turned on my TV. And I love the music too, of course. I remember watching Head and having absolutely no idea what I was watching, and saw them in concert for my 18th birthday in Atlantic City. And then, you know, I got into some other interests as the years went on. And then in about 2008, I was in graduate school, and it turned out that one of my professors was a Monkees fan. And that led me to kind of start poking around online. And I discovered, and what got me into the online fandom, in fact, was fan fiction, was the LiveJournal communities that were around back then. And that was indeed where I met Moondreams, with whom I founded Naked Persimmon. And that was, but that was what drew me into the online fandom, and then on Facebook, and then after we started Naked Persimmon, then we started on Tumblr in 2011, and been doing that ever since.
I love these stories, because everybody's kind of, they're all different, but they're all kind of the same. Let's start with Jamie this time. How and why did you start creating monkeys-related art?
Well, in a sense, and I think Aaron kind of touched on this early on, it's a way to further their adventures, really. How many episodes did we get? 58 in a movie? And sometimes you wonder, well, how come they didn't do this, maybe? Or how come they didn't do this? I think when I was 19, I had started some ridiculous story where Mickey got struck by lightning and he thought he was a guru. I never finished it, but I... that's...
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know why I went there, but it's fun. It's a way to extend that universe or explore things that either maybe the writers didn't think about, wouldn't have thought about, or different subjects you could touch on. It's just a lot of fun. I mean, I like doing fan art for other things too, just because I like the characters that much. I kind of want to carry on. Plus, I like the challenge of trying to draw these new little faces.
How about you, Mish?
Well, I'm pretty much a writer. I have done some artwork, and I've put various things up online, and I have a page on my website with some drawings, which are mostly monkeys, but really writing is my main avenue of creation. It was when I rediscovered the show in my early 20s that I started writing stories, because I came into writing kind of late. I was really about 12 or 13 when I really started just things pouring out of me. And when I rediscovered the monkeys, I realized what good characters these were, which is the main draw for me. And like Jamie said, why did they leave this? What happened after this? What if? And those are usually the things that drive a lot of my creations. And at first, it was kind of a way of getting to interact with them and getting to be a part of it, which is a big part of my own writing personally. But then I kind of branched out into other things, and I'm the creator of the very, very large and currently on hold series called Secrets and Lies, where I kind of took some of my own proclivities and said, well, what happens if you gave the monkeys really, really top-notch fighting abilities, and what would have happened then? And I just kind of spun it out, let it go, and it took on a life of its own. And I love when things do that, when they just kind of take on a power of their own and just branch out, and you just watch them go. And after a while, you almost feel like you're not really in control anymore. They've taken it over. So that for me is always a thrill. And with the monkeys, it really happened that way.
Miss Minnie, how and why did you start writing?
I've been writing since I was 10 years old. Fan fiction came along around when I was 14, I would say, but I was writing about other bands, other genres, other things besides the monkeys, interestingly. And I was writing adult fan fiction at that time, but not about the monkeys. It never kind of, that never crossed over that boundary for me at that point. And then coming back to the show at the age of, 28, suddenly I'm watching it and I realize these guys are really hot. And
true.
And yeah. Where beforehand my ears had been attuned to Davy's English accent, all of a sudden it was like, well, there's this other accent that I'm suddenly hearing, and it's Southern, and I don't hate it. This is weird. This means something. So suddenly I was viewing the monkeys through an entirely different lens, and I had no idea that there even was monkeys fan fiction. And so finding it in those live journal communities was, it opened the floodgates, really. It was, I read my first, and I was hooked. I was completely done. I felt comfortable writing that stuff because I'd written that kind of stuff about other things, and I remember being nervous, actually, the first time that I wrote a monkeys fan fiction story, because I wanted to do a good service to them, because I love them so much, because they are so close to me, that I wanted the story to be faithful and capture their personality. So I was very hesitant, but once I started, I couldn't stop. And befriending Moondreams, we kind of were each other's enabler, and we would just write stories with each other, and it just went from there. So
Aaron, what about you? How and why did you start getting into monkeys art?
You kind of have this desire to continue what doesn't exist. Rather, what exists, you want to expand on that universe. And you have in the case of the Monkees, you have these the four guys, and they each have their personalities, and it's a challenge to both create a story that's unique through, whether it be through drawing or fan fiction, making it recognizable as the Monkees, and not going, it's part of the process is keeping it faithful to the series while putting your own voice into it, and that you have that ability to be creative, and the challenge of keeping it, this is something that could happen.
I do have one question. What is everybody's favorite song and monkey song? And if you could, like, Mish, let's go with you. What is your favorite monkey song?
For the moment, because this changes every 5 seconds, Pleasant Valley Sunday, I gotta say.
I agree. That's a good one. That's a good one. Okay, Miss Minnie.
When I first met Mickey several years ago, I was big into all of your toys. And I told him that I loved it because his voice was like oral sex to me on that song. Oral as in A-U-R-A-L.
A-U-R-A-L.
Yes. Yes. He took it well.
Aaron, what's your favorite song?
Randy Scouse Git, always. No, not even a question. It always has been.
And Jamie?
I'm going to gauge it currently by the reaction that I have whenever it has cropped up in the past couple of tours. And it's because it was the very first song I heard, and it was it's the kind of girl I could love. It was the very first one I heard on the very first episode I saw. They do that one in concert, and I just sit there gape mouth going, oh! And suddenly I'm, you know, 8 and a half in front of my TV set again. Oh, my God! So.
This one to everybody. Fan fiction and fan art kind of have sometimes a less than savory reputation in culture, and I, you know, or people think it's just silly, or they think it's all, you know, adult, which is not necessarily the case. Some is, some isn't. But do you think specifically, and I'm going to throw this out to everybody, do you think that monkeys fan fiction slash art gets a particularly bad reputation? And if so, why?
I don't know that it's specifically the monkeys. I've seen there is sort of a stigma attached to it because it was a children's show, first of all. And to write about it, I don't know if people that would know that I do the fan art and do the fan fiction, if they would think, why is that happening? This was not intended to be something that you should carry on. It was like essentially a Saturday morning cartoon with live actors. And
I mean, I know with people that I've communicated with, a lot of times it's, really? People write fanfic about the monkeys? And yeah, my response is usually, they write fanfic about anything you can imagine mm-hmm. is out there. It's not as big as some of the other huge fandoms, but it is there. And it doesn't particularly matter that it was a TV show from the 60s, as long as there are people out there who like it and want to share it with others. So that's just a natural thing. I think fanfiction in general still gets a really bad rap, and even from people that should know better. I've had a lot of my fellow English academics, you know, bash fan fiction, and then they talk about loving Shakespeare, and I'm going, oh, the irony. So
I think fan fiction does get a bad rap because it is largely a female-driven medium. The force, most of the authors of fan fiction are women, and anything that is something that is kind of led by women is automatically looked down on. It's not valid until a man comes along and says, oh, this is okay. And for a lot of us, that's a very frustrating thing because it's already okay to us. The validation comes from ourselves and from sharing it with other fans who appreciate it. That was kind of part of why we started NP, Naked Persimmon, was we wanted a safe space for people to be able to write these stories and share these stories with one another without fear of judgment, without fear of being looked down on. But the problem that we encountered, you know, because of the nature of our site and that our fanfiction is more adult in nature, is that we've encountered policing from monkeys fans who will say, well, you're if you're writing this stuff and reading this stuff, you're a bad fan. You're not a real monkeys fan because you're reading and writing this horrible filth. What's wrong with you? And that's exactly, and there's so many fans who feel that these things should not exist without their approval. Many fans, and disproportionately a lot of them are first generation, feel like they're the gatekeepers of the monkeys, that they are the original fans, and therefore it's up to them to approve anything that second, third, fourth generation fans might want to do. And a lot of us don't hold to that. We don't believe that that is the case, and we don't look for anyone's approval. We don't even look for the monkeys' approval.
I was just going to say that back in the day of Long Title, I was a moderator briefly for about a year or so, and on the group, and it wasn't, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say it's just first generation fans. I think all fan generations have people who are guilty of this, because we had younger fans coming into the community who would, you know, and they would, and we were even a like PG-13 and below rated group, but they would still get antsy about particular things that were maybe too edgy for them. But, you know, what I keep coming back to is the in Long Title, the signature file on every email that went out is better to write for yourself and have no public than to write for the public and have no self.
Mm-hmm. That's a good thought.
And that somehow encapsulates fanfic in general and fan art in general, and the monkeys fanfic community specifically for me.
I personally am one of the neediest writers I've ever met, where I need approval, or I need somebody to at least say, this doesn't suck. But generally my attitude is, I'm writing this to amuse myself. If you like it, great, but if you don't, I'm not really putting this out here to say I need your stamp on it. And I've gotten some criticisms that don't make any sense, and I've gone, well, that's your opinion, you're entitled to it, yep, but my work stands as it is.
So and true.
I think you're... My tablecloth thinks you... Many years ago, ago, we had the pleasure of going over to the UK and meeting the members of the royal family.
Prince Charles?
No, Beatles. And one night, they threw us a party. I'm told I had a great time. And after the party, I went back to my hotel room and I noodled around and I wrote a song that I called Randy Scousgit. And when they were going to release it in England, they said, you have to change the title. I said, why? I said, it's dirty. I said, what do you mean? I saw it on television, on a TV show. They said, no, it's dirty. You have to change it to an alternate title. So in England, it became a big hit and it's called, over in England, Alternate Title. But over here, it's still called Randy Scousgit. And loosely translated, it means a horny Liverpudlian putz.
Best thing about being in the Monkees fan community?
Part of the good thing about the Monkees fandom is that it's not enormous, it's not all encompassing, it's not something that everyone gets into, but at the same time it's not teeny tiny so that you can't find people that share your interests. So when I post my fan art, I get the fandom isn't so big that I get the negative. You get people that like to share art for the sake of making fun of it in certain fandoms. Mm-hmm. I've mm-hmm. never gotten that with the Monkees. I've always gotten a favorable response, whether it's yeah. gentle criticism or if, you know, this is great. When are you gonna do more? And that's important mm-hmm. to me. And that continues to create the atmosphere of having really close friends. And that's why I keep on in it.
Absolutely. Although it is primarily, or at least the areas that I was in were primarily female, but it was not a homogenous group. You have people of all shapes and sizes, all tastes, all opinions, all kinds of voices. I mean, for me, the fan community has been valuable in the greatest respect that I have literally found my family mm-hmm. through it. The first time I've ever had that in my life, so that getting it from the Monkees fandom means it will always have a special place no matter what happens after. It gave me family and people that I will be close to for the rest of my life. So, I mean, that's the value in it for me.
Well, for Naked Persimmon, you know, it's been extremely gratifying being in the fandom, in that we, you know, as many haters as we've gotten, as many trolls as we've had to deal with, the overwhelmingly positive response to what we do is so gratifying. To have people on the Facebook page commenting and saying how much they love our stuff and that they really dig our kind of more sarcastic bent toward the monkeys, because we're definitely talking with our tongues firmly planted in our cheeks almost all the time. So, because our at the core of our entire structure of our website and what we do is the belief that the monkeys do not take themselves that seriously, so why the hell should
why
we?
Yeah.
So, we, you know, and that's just been, and to see people respond to that, and you know, that was something we were very apprehensive about in the beginning, was would people, you know, respond to this? Would they could be like, oh no, this is the monkeys and they're sacred and how dare you? And of course there were some you know, some people like that, but there are, and there continue to be, and there always will be. But overwhelmingly, the voices that are louder than theirs are of the people who love what we're doing and who are supportive of what we do. And for me personally, I've met some of the dearest people that I know through the monkeys, through the fandom. I've met some of the freakiest people I know, and I love them. So,
yeah, I think what I learned most from being a monkeys fan and being in the monkeys fandom specifically is just to not care what other people think and to not take myself seriously. And honestly, when I start learning that, life got a whole lot better.
Yep.
All of your toys. We'll be right back.
Did anybody else have anything they wanted to add?
One of the things that I like also is when you dive into that fandom, that giant pool out there on the interwebs, there is something for everybody. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. I mean, if you want art, you've got art. If you want fanfic, you've got fanfic. If you want somebody with teen mag scans, because those things they're kind of hard to come by, and being a fan from 86, I totally missed out on that. And I sometimes you don't feel like trying to track them all down on eBay. So, hey, there they are on the internet. I can read this goofy story about missing scenes from Head or whatever, or what Mike Nesmith has for breakfast, which apparently is a big bowl of Texas chili. Why do I need to know that? I don't know, but I feel better.
Yes,
knowing
Pacho.
That.
Oh, God.
Oof, yeah. And now he puts pictures of his breakfast on Instagram, so.
I can't look at his Instagram. I get really hungry. That's not fair.
No.
Can we all just take a minute to accept the fact that we're living in a world where Michael Nesmith has an Instagram? Because I don't think we ever thought we'd be living in that world.
No.
Oh, yeah, and plays World of Warcraft.
And plays World of Warcraft.
Well, I mean, if you'd come to me back in 2000 and said, you're going to meet Nez and you're going to get to talk to the man and look into those eyes and they'll be looking back at you, I would have looked at you and gone, are you nuts? What are you, a nut?
Yeah. I think I would have said that in 2011.
True.
Yeah. It is amazing times we live in, and it's really done amazing things for the fandom, and I think it's why it's such a fun place to be 98-99% of the time. But, you know, we also got to talk about that other 1% a bit. What y'all's experience has kind of been, what's the most challenging thing about being a part of the Monkees fandom?
Where do you start, huh?
Well,
yeah.
I think the obvious answer is the fans, some of them that I'm sure we have all experienced, the ones who take themselves way too seriously. Especially for me, it's the ones that like to drop names and talk as if, well, I got to do this and I saw Peter this many times, so I have this insider kind of thing, like I'm chummy with, and it's that, who are you trying to one-up? And it folks like that, which I've run into the whole gamut, they really, for me, sum up the old Monty Python line of, it's people like you what cause unrest. It seems like it would just be so much nicer if you people would go away, but unfortunately you're going to have them anywhere, so dealing with that and learning to kind of keep on an even keel with it is a huge challenge.
Those are the people that are the fans of what they've created for themselves instead of being fans of the thing that they're supposedly fans of, which doesn't seem like a productive, because you're always, like you said, you're always trying to one-up everyone else because that's where you get your joy instead of from the thing itself. And I think that's a problem, a big problem.
Yeah, it becomes more about them than about the Monkees.
Right.
A very important note that applies not just to the Monkees but to any celebrity is that the people who are closest to a celebrity are the ones who don't talk about it. Because the ones who go on and on about it are the ones who want it to seem like they're very close. And really they're not.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
To know.
But, yeah, very true, Miss Minnie.
As to what's been challenging, you know, when you start off in the fandom immediately with people threatening you and telling you that the Monkees are going to hate you for what you're doing, that's kind of right out of the gate. That's a bit of a challenge. But if you can get past that, as we have, I mean, everybody else said it so well. It's the fans that you know. There's absolutely nothing that any of the Monkees I don't think could do that could make me stop being a fan. But there have been dozens upon dozens of times where issues that have come up with fans have made me nearly stop being a fan. Where people just they do take it incredibly seriously and they start ascribing certain things, like they put words in our mouth, so to speak. Like they.
Right.
You know, Naked Persimmon said this, or Naked Persimmon meant that, and it's like, back up, be kind, rewind. Ooh, foul, penalty, offside. I never said that. That's not true.
Yeah.
And it's the misunderstandings. We're firm believers of being very upfront and forthright about things. So if someone has a problem, we always encourage them to message us, to talk to us, come to us. But rather what people end up doing is going out and posting on Facebook or wherever and airing their grievances in such a way that it's just trashing our site for no reason. That's irritating.
Yeah, very true, Miss Many.
I've come to a couple points, like you said, about where you almost want to give it up because of other people. And I remember one time I just got real mad and I said, no, if I do that, you win and I lose. So you know what? Forget you. You're not going to drive me away. And I got mad. And ever since then, if you want to ruin it for me, attacking me is not going to do it because I'm not going anywhere.
So true, Mish.
I would encourage anybody who's a fan, if you're feeling just overloaded by the fandom, take a step back, take 5, 10, 20, and just take care of yourself more than anything.
Yep. I sign off a lot of my blog posts with, it's just fandom, which it is. So, I've been in the Monkees fandom on and off since the mid-90s, and you hear a lot of talk about male Monkees fans versus female Monkees fans. And then you get talk about all the different generations, because there's, you know, the first generation in the 60s and the second generation who kept the ship afloat in the 70s until the third generation folks like me and I think Jamie came along in the 80s, and then the fourth gen that came along in the 90s with Justice and the reunion concerts and all of that. And then, I mean, there's a new generation of fans coming up today.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yes. I just, it makes me so happy that folks like, you know, like Zach are listening to the show. It's just so awesome.
I went to a Monkees concert in Cleveland. A little girl was walking out of the auditorium and had this drawing on a paper bag in her hand of, she was holding Peter's hand, and she couldn't have been more than 8 years old, and I was just walking behind her and she was talking to her mom about it, and it was the cutest thing in the world. It's like she drew it while she was at the concert. I don't know when, but it was on just a paper bag in blue crayon. Cutest thing ever.
This is why I don't worry about the Monkees fandom going away.
We'll never go away. There will always be fans. There might not be that many, but this show has the longevity and staying power that there will always be fans.
I think so. Given all that diversity, do any of you think that it's possible to define what a, quote, true Monkees fan is? And if so, what would that person be like?
Yeah, there's a true Monkees fan. It's anyone who's a fan.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's all there is to it. If you like them, it's something you dig, it's a gas, then that's what you are.
I mean, to say, to separate someone into a true Monkees fan, that would have to mean that there's a such thing as a false Monkees fan, which, what would that be? Someone that does all this stuff and loves the Monkees and it's anti-matter Monkees fans? I don't know.
I love that, Aaron.
Yeah, but,
So, no, I don't really think, unless you're talking about every single fan, there's no true way to be a fan.
If you enjoy it, you're a fan, and that's the best kind of fan to be. Does it make you happy? Great. Does it matter if you have a room full of memorabilia and every ticket stub, or if you just have one t-shirt and a greatest hits album? Do you love that thing? Do you enjoy it? Does it make you happy? You're a fan. You're perfect. There you go.
Very true, Jamie.
Okay, I was just going to say, I named my bearded dragon Mickey, so that's what I got.
There you go.
I love Mickey.
I named something of mine Mr. Dabalina, but I'm not going to say what it is. This is a family show, people.
And it doesn't matter if you're a fan of primarily the show, or if you like the music and like all the minutia and you want to collect all the concerts and you're into memorabilia. If you like these guys in whatever permutation, then you're a fan. And really, there isn't anyone who really has the right to be able to say, well, I can declare who is and who isn't. Well, who are you? So if you like them, you're a true fan, and that's the only answer that I guess really makes any sense.
Makes sense to me.
Okay. Street.
In what ways has being a Monkees fan made your lives better, either as a person or as an artist or both?
Well, there's always the aspect of practice. It's true. Every time I draw something, I draw it a little better. And if it's the Monkees, which I've drawn over and over the past couple years, it means that when I do something original, which I also draw, it's going to be that much better for the fact that I've been practicing on these other drawings. And if it's writing, the best thing about doing fan fiction is you share it with so many people. If you're writing original fiction that you intend to get published, you don't want the whole world to have read it before it's published. And writing fan fiction, it's just as good as original fiction, mm-hmm. in many cases. But more people will give you feedback, and you can hone your writing using fan fiction, and you can still tell a good story. It's great. And
yeah.
People you meet and the feedback you get, it makes lasting, lifelong friendships.
Yeah, no, that's too true. Especially the constructive criticism has definitely made me a better writer. I remember, because we share around papers and stuff in my PhD classes, and we kind of pass things around, and everybody always says, "You give such good feedback on my stuff," or "Your writing's really polished." I'm like, okay, I cannot tell these people that I learned how to do this in a Monkees fan fiction writing group.
Sure you can.
It is the truth, and you know, who knows, maybe they're listening right now. So,
kind of an unintended side effect of joining the fandom, writing the fan fiction, and starting Naked Persimmon is that we've been able to kind of dismantle the perceptions of what it is to be a fan of the Monkees. We've been able to kind of show that it is possible, especially for female fans who often are disparaged because we came to the Monkees, you know, because they were marketed to young fans, and that's how we kind of accessed them, 13 magazines and through that kind of teeny bopper entryway. But what we've been able to do is show that it's possible to find the guy hot and love the music and, you know, have a bunch of albums and dig all the stuff like that. So it's possible for those qualities to exist in one person, and not just in female fans, but male fans too. We're taking away the whole idea of pigeonholing people into one category.
Well, and you know, I think in some ways what you're doing is very authentic and true to the Monkees fandom, because think about it. What were the Monkees most famous for doing? They put their fist through the wall and said they wanted to make their art in their way. And, you know, I think Naked Persimmon, really a lot of you are sort of doing the fandom equivalent of that in one form or another.
Oh, yeah. For me, it was the first time that I was ever able to actually share my work with anybody else, because I had to keep all of my creative things absolutely private, because people would tease me about it or not take it seriously. People said they liked it and gave me positive feedback and helped me be a better writer, and it helped me open up for the first time. And to be honest, it was also some of my first social interaction, having friends that liked the same thing I did, and I could finally talk about this stuff with other people. So it helped me open up quite a bit over the last, you know, 15 years. So it my life is completely different, and it's thanks in no small part to the Monkees, who led me to where I am now. And I've often said in my more maudlin moments that it's something that I will never be able to repay them for.
That is such your mish. I know totally what you're saying. Jamie, I don't think you've gone yet.
Like Aaron said, it's made me a better artist and writer for sure. And I'm still working on getting stuff out there for other people to consume, because touching on the whole bullying and being teased for what you like, that went on from grade school through high school and other fandom groups that I have been in. I'll be honest, I won't name names of particular fandoms, but this is the one where nobody has made me feel terrible for doing what I do and for liking what I like. God bless you, you know. And in that regard, also the extended family that I have somehow inherited, which is just fantastic. Yeah. It sounds trivial at first to say, well, you know, we connected through this TV show about a band, but that's the starting point. And you start actually developing a genuine friendship, and you figure out, well, wait a minute, we've got a lot more in common. Yeah. And it it's amazing. And I don't think the guys could ever possibly imagine that something that they participated in or still participating in has affected that many people and made us so darn happy. Thank you very much, because I like my little family. You guys are awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is one dysfunctional family. We just say that right now.
Well, they all are.
I think that's really a good note on which to end this section of our panel. Because Monkees fandom and fandom in general has given all of us families by choice who in some ways can be as supportive and as loving as even the most functional families by blood, it never ceases to amaze me that a little throwaway sitcom about four guys in a band would have connected us all to such amazing people. Where can listeners find your stuff? Listeners, don't panic if you're driving, because all of these links will be posted in the show notes for this episode at facebook.com/groups/ZilchMonkeysCast, which you really ought to join anyway if you haven't already.
Erin?
It's Erin's Art on Facebook, and that's where all my monkey stuff is and all my original stuff and everything else in between.
And I should mention, Erin's name is spelled A-E-R-Y-N.
Yes, it is.
Jamie?
Probably the best place for me is also on Facebook. I've got a little page. It's facebook.com/smitstuff, S-M-I-T-S-T-U-F-F. That essentially is where all my stuff is. There's sketches, there's finished art, there's other things, puppets, plushies, pretty much you name it, I think I've made it.
Mish?
My live journal profile page, which is I am Nesmith on LiveJournal. I got in early and got that name right away.
Wow, but nice.
It's nesmith.livejournal.com/profile. It has a link to my website where all of my monkey stuff is, and then my Archive of Our Own page, which is slowly gathering collections. So pretty much any place I put any of my work, I put links there, so it's all in one place.
Miss Minnie.
If you search for Naked Persimmon on Google, we take up pretty much the whole first page of search results. We are at, which is awesome.
Yes.
It took a while, but we edged out the video from 33 and the Third Revolutions. We edged that out. You can find us at nakedpersimmon.com, and we have a Facebook fan page, facebook.com/npersimmon, because they wouldn't let us use the word naked. Okay. We have a Tumblr, of course, nakedpersimmon.tumblr.com. You can find our stuff there too. So those are all the great places to find all your Naked Persimmon needs.
Yep. And I like to say that Naked Persimmon is the best website in the monkeys world for grown-ups who behave like they're about 13.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for that, Sarah. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Well, thank you to Erin and to Jamie and to Mish and to Miss Minnie for sharing your thoughts and experiences about being part of this amazing fan culture that has been around in some form or another for just about 50 years, and may it be around a lot more, because I think it's become a very important part of my life, and I think it's become a very important part of everybody else's life here. So thanks, everybody.
And that's our show. Zilch is an online nonprofit monkeys audio fanzine made by fans for fans. Any samples of music or interviews heard remain property of their owners. We are not related to the Monkees or any of their members past or present. We are not affiliated with Rhino or Ray Burke. If you hear anything you like from the band, go on Amazon or iTunes and buy it. If you enjoyed the show, like us on Facebook and rate us on iTunes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm your announcer, Chelsea Epstein, saying always take some time to monkey around.
Boom. Here are your outtakes, folks. I hope you're enjoying them. Go.
Well, today joining me
That's actually the sound of Ken disconnecting, and that's a sound I never thought I'd hear.
Amen. Yeah. Amen.